BioBalance Health Podcast, Episode 22. I'm Dr. Kathy Maupin, Founder and Medical Director of BioBalance Health. With me today is Brett Newcomb, a presenter and trainer, and a marriage counselor, family therapist, and teacher. We're about to talk about orgasms for women and what the roadblocks are so that our patients can hear about other patients and their problems, maybe focus in on some of the things that have happened to them or to their wives.
Yeah, and you know, the roadblocks issue is across a multiple spectrum. You have physiological issues, which are the main things that you deal with. You have psychological and sociological issues, which we both deal with. In any conservative culture, women grow up getting the message that their sexuality is meant to be a reflection of something that's created by their partner, and it's not something that they own or have for themselves. Mm-hmm. And so they are discouraged, they're shamed, they're given caustic messages about self-expression, self-exploration, and that inhibits for many of them their openness to experimentation, exploration, looking at the issue of self-satisfaction. And so that causes some of them to be what we call anorgasmic. They never quite get there. Mm-hmm. They are a vessel to serve their partner, but they're not an independently functioning vessel.
Right. Or just think it's bad and they never get over it. Think they've had this drummed into their mind and soul that sex is bad and you should never think about it and you should never
it's dirty
do
and
it.
It's shameful.
And even in their marriages, they can't quite get over it.
I've had a lot of women through 30 years of practice who've come into my office with issues of sexual dissatisfaction in the marriage. And often they will say, well, my partner is dissatisfied with my performance, frequency, responsiveness, whatever it may be. But then they will go on to say that they don't particularly care. They don't necessarily feel those desires. They're only doing it as a chore. You know, it's like doing the laundry. It's one of the things I have to do. Yeah, and it's really, really sad.
That's really missing out on what life was supposed to give you.
And I will ask them, do you fantasize? Do you masturbate? Do you do anything for yourself away from, you know, this relationship? And they look horrified, and they're like, oh, my God, no, you're not supposed to do that. That's a sin.
In younger women as well, because most of
no,
my patients
younger women,
who are
no.
over now, over the age of 50,
the
have that problem.
Cultural messages are changing.
And below that,
yeah.
They're like, oh, yeah, I have a rabbit. You
yes.
know, like I have to tell the older women my age, I have to say, you know, at drugstore.com,
yeah.
you can order a rabbit. And it'll come in a brown box. You don't have to go to a store or a sex yeah. store or whatever. And it'll come in a brown box. It looks like a prescription.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have one. You mm-hmm. don't have to go to some imposing
dirty store
place.
And embarrass
yeah.
yourself.
Yeah. yeah. So in that way, I've noticed that there's a real break right now, the people that are 50.
And younger women are much more open in talking about their sexuality and their exploratory behaviors and their achievements of orgasms.
So those of us who grew up in the 70s
yeah.
as adolescents are now teaching our children a different way to look at sex.
I sure hope so.
I hope so too. I still think that there's a lot of negative talk about sex, and that's how society actually controls young women so that they keep their fertility they keep themselves for their marriage. Right. But
it's not our discussion for today. But
no.
our culture is so over-sexualized in terms of media exposure,
mm-hmm.
Videos, movies, advertisements sell sex. And yet our adolescent teenagers who have crossed into puberty and are sexually functional get all these messages about shame and guilt and repression of desire, repression of natural function. And they don't get clear messages about intimacy, about love, about recreational sex, you know, whether it's okay, when it's okay, who it's okay with, what is okay about it or not, depending on the value system of the family. But their access level to information is so great that they're bypassing a lot of those familial messages and developing their own little subset, which is leading to some real concerns for schools and parents about sexuality as it's expressed in very young teens.
My poor daughter, when she went to, she was two, and we took her to a Catholic preschool. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She told everybody that girls have vaginas and boys have penises, and that girls can have babies, so boys weren't as cool.
So I didn't want her to have envy. After that?
She got locked in a closet. It was the worst day of her life and mine as well, because, you know, my practice is talking to people on the mm-hmm. phone at home during call hours, and I have to talk about anything, and she was there.
Yeah.
And I couldn't have her leave the room every 5 minutes.
So do you talk about masturbation with the women that you see? Does that come up as a conversation point?
It comes up it comes up when it needs to come up. If someone needs advice on that, then I look for cues in their history. Or if they say they're anorgasmic, I mean, one of the ways to see if you can actually trust yourself enough, because trust is part of it. You have to trust your partner to let go and have an orgasm. But we try to have people self-stimulate, have a masturbate so that they can see if they can actually achieve an orgasm.
So a large part of the research says that that's about giving yourself permission to relax, to experience,
trust,
to be aware, mm-hmm. to explore. And there have been so many cultural messages that say, don't give yourself permission. So it is problematic then when there are also physiological impediments, because they're going to make the assumption that the problem is psychological or psychosocial, that it's religious, it's guilt, it's shame. And there may literally be a physical block of some kind, like lower testosterone or mm-hmm. higher estradiol or some other issue, low thyroid, mm-hmm. what have you, that would impact their functionality.
That's true. There, some people have never had a very good testosterone level, men and women. Men often, if they've had undescended testicles or if they've had trauma to the testicles, don't have a really good testosterone level even when they're young. Women, generally, it's hard to tell, because being hairy or something like that doesn't mean you have a high testosterone level. It means you have very high receptor sites for DHT, which is a metabolite of testosterone. Doesn't always mean your testosterone's higher than other people.
Right.
So there, just like everything else in humanity, there's a bell curve. There's some people who have a lot and some people have very little. And we're talking today about the people who have very little. That could be one of the causes of anorgasmia or orgasmic problem, because you have to, there's always a normal level of testosterone that is required for your brain to actually make oxytocin so that you can actually feel an orgasm or actually want an orgasm. Some people don't really have that desire. Testosterone gives you desire, and it also provides it also stimulates oxytocin so that you can feel the orgasm. And that's the hormone that causes the dilation of all the vessels, the flush, the pelvic, we call it engorgement, but it's pelvic blood flow for women, which is necessary for
lubrication,
which is necessary for having an orgasm. So in terms of that, testosterone is a much more important hormone to have than estrogen. And it can take over for estrogen. Sometimes, even if we don't have estrogen, our ovaries are removed and no estrogen's given. Testosterone causes the vagina to be wet and stretchy and more like a young person's vagina. So we need that base. We need to have a normal health generally to have orgasms. So it's about health. It's about genetic or diseases that cause low testosterone, but genetic low testosterone or some problem with ovaries or aging that causes decrease in testosterone. Then we go to, for women, we go to estrogen. You have to as well have that as well. Then thyroid, because thyroid can cause your ovaries to malfunction. So if your thyroid's off, if it's low, you can have anorgasmia from that. You can also, obesity also sometimes causes anorgasmia because it changes all the hormones in the body.
Right.
And then you have to look at neurologic function. Do we have all the nerves to our pelvis?
But part of the message that you want to get out in the community for the work that you do is that for generations, as people have aged, these problems occur because of drops in testosterone and estrogen that are like dominoes falling over that lead to other problems like vaginal dryness or poor blood flow or what have you.
And then heart disease and then Alzheimer's and then all of those other things we associate with aging.
Become a thing that culturally and medically, docs would say, well, you're getting old. That's just part of getting old. You need to deal with it. That's gone. Find something else to do. Take up knitting.
yeah.
And your message is that now that we can sort of separate out sexual process, sexual functioning from procreation, mm-hmm. and we're beyond the procreative concerns or years, no longer means that we have to lose that sexual energy and sexual experience that hopefully we had as youths. And so you can do some things to remedy that and put people back at that point where physiologically they can function like they did 20, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And then, they do. I have a really good success rate with that.
Well, and there's a story about an anorgasmic mm-hmm. woman that you told me that I want mm-hmm. you to talk about in a minute. But what then becomes this issue to resolve, if you've taken care of the medical components, is to talk about the psychological, social, intimacy components of how you express yourself to one another, what your expectations are, what your desires are, and whether or not you're open to exploration and growth. You know, are you willing to play around, to experiment, to do some things that maybe you didn't do before because now you can? You can do it without fear of getting pregnant. You can do it without vaginal pain, vaginal dryness. You can deal with your erectile dysfunction. There are so many things that medicine can do now to offset those.
It can't fix the risk-taking that it takes to show your entire self to somebody else.
Yeah.
To take off the mask that you talk about.
That's right.
Often. Take off all your masks.
To be willing to do that. To take that risk to
be out of control.
It's a risk to get hurt.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's a risk even within a marriage. People, even as a marriage progresses, there's more things to be hurt about because there's more time to have been hurt. And so people tend to
pull back. It's like baseball. You know, when they say, you know, some you win, some you lose, but you got to suit up for all of them. You know? You have to get in that position to be able to win or lose. If you don't take the risk, you lose by definition.
So you have to be hormonally intact and psychologically intact to be able to bring this to fruition. Now, people who have never had an orgasm, and I see them in their 50s,
right.
Generally, I guess maybe I wouldn't know if they didn't tell me, but the story that you're referring to is I had two women in one day, and they were back to back. And they both sat in my office, and it was a follow-up visit. They had already had their testosterone pellets. They already felt better. They said their energy was back. They told me all those things. And then the first one said, and guess what? I've never had an orgasm before, and now I have. Now I know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And she never she didn't tell me she was anorgasmic.
Right.
Forever.
That hadn't been part of the discussion.
So her life, she had been married over 25 years.
Wow, that's really
so
sad.
So that is sad. But now she knows what it's like. She says, I'm playing catch up.
Yeah.
And now I get it. So she'd either been on the pill, which had shut down her testosterone, or she'd been pregnant, which sometimes shuts down your testosterone. Right. Then she went into menopause. Mm-hmm. So that's what happens.
Strike three, you're out.
Yeah, that's right. So she had never really had a good testosterone level. So when we gave that to her, everything else fell into place.
Now, is that what you would call secondary?
That's primary because she had never had an orgasm.
Because the literature says that 22-37% of the women are anorgasmic, but you told me that that's secondary anorgasm.
Yeah, that's generally secondary, meaning they've had orgasms their whole life, and then they hit 40-something, and they go away when their testosterone drops.
Okay. And that can be caused by the physiological decline, or it can be caused by some emotional or sexual trauma. I mean, there are multiple reasons why.
Generally, people who are sexually abused in childhood never have orgasms. They protect themselves mm-hmm. by not letting go that much, and that's something that you would have to deal with in counseling, or somebody would have to deal with in counseling.
Right.
People who have been emotionally or any kind of abuse in a marriage are going to not want to let go.
And especially if they're physiologically intact, they just go away somewhere and their body does what it does, but it doesn't belong to them.
Or it doesn't.
And they're not aware that it hurts. I mean, they just go away until it's over.
So abuse is part of it. Hormones mm-hmm. is part of it. Relationship is part of it. Society is part of it.
But there's help for all of those issues. And the most critical piece is the physiological piece, to make sure that your neurology and your blood flow and your lubrication, all those things are intact in the way that they should be.
Yes.
Then if there are problems, get help elsewhere, because there's therapy, there's cognitive behavioral training. There are all kinds of things.
There's even physical therapists that help women who don't feel comfortable touching their vaginas,
mm-hmm.
or their vulvas.
Yes.
You know, they don't want to touch that area. They can't use tampons. They can't, you know, they have an aversion to that for some reason. Something happened and they have an aversion to it, or they just, it's from before they could remember. But there's physical therapists that will help with that, and will train patients to actually be able to do that.
I met a sex therapist, a PhD in psychology, at the National Counseling Convention last year in Philadelphia. And she's a very young girl, young to me. I mean, mm-hmm. She's in her mid-20s, late-20s. And she says that one of the shock value comments that she does when she runs women's group is she introduces herself and the topic and so on. And then she says, I want to go around the room and I want each of you to tell me what you like best about your vagina. And she says, the silence is deafening.
It works.
But it goes back to what you were saying about the younger generation is so much more comfortable with discussing this issue, with exploring this issue, than are the people we typically see.
I mean, we grew up, you shouldn't show your belly button in public.
Yeah.
I mean, for goodness sakes.
Especially if it didn't have a diamond in it or anything.
That's, yeah, like now. Or a ring in it. But so many of my patients really desire to have their orgasms back. I mean, mm-hmm. they don't have these other issues. They come to me generally because they've lost it and they don't know how to get it back.
Yes.
And their doctors have said, you're old, forget it. I'm not giving you hormones or anything else, because who needs, you know, young doctors, who needs to have sex after 45?
Or their partner is saying, I miss that part of you and it's really creating problems for me.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe they are more positioned to say, well, it is what it is, and I'm where I am, and so we just have to move on, because mm-hmm. they don't understand that it can be treated, that it can be fixed.
I think the worst part for me is when patients tell me that they're just too afraid to take, quote-unquote, hormones because of what the press has
cancer.
Done about cancer, which testosterone doesn't cause any cancers, especially in women. It doesn't cause any. You know, that's just not its role, and they're afraid to take testosterone because they consider it a hormone. Well, so is thyroid, and so, you know, so is insulin, and, you know, but that wouldn't stop them from taking those hormones.
Well, once again, we've wandered all over the map.
Well, not really. Honestly, I think that this is stuff patients need to hear. I think they need to hear the other side, the other extreme as well, because this is just a kind of something that I ran into when I was at Susan Berman's talk in Chicago a few years ago. It's the other extreme.
Yeah.
She believes, and I have to say that I don't believe this, and my nurse practitioners and I were sitting in the front row, of course. She believes that every girl should be given a rabbit vibrator.
Yeah.
When they're 10. 10.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. So
that would set off a cultural firestorm.
The DFS would be
called. Yeah,
exactly. As far as I could tell, mm-hmm. But she and all the other experts were young people.
Right.
They didn't have children over the. I asked.
Yeah.
They didn't have children over the age of
7. Because I think there are secondary parenting questions that would come up around that issue.
Yeah, and so I went home and asked my daughter, who was then 20.
Yeah.
And I said, just tell me what you would have done.
Yeah.
She said, I would have called the police.
Good for her.
So I said, okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not off on that. So I think that's the other extreme, and I don't think that that's healthy to go there. I think that's kind of dangerous.
Well, that's one of the problems with causists. They get extreme, they see one page, and they want everybody to be on that page. What you're talking about is balance and recovery by looking at all of the different elements and exploring the possibility that you can get your life back, that it doesn't have to be gone. But
right.
It remains your choice.
And a disclaimer, I love this woman. She's awesome. This is the only part that I just thought was so extreme that I couldn't agree with.
Well, it's a real shock value statement.
Yeah. Otherwise, she educates women very well about the psychology of the sexual response. I like her books, but this was just a little extreme, and I don't think she would have said it, you know, in a non-medical group.
Yeah.
However, I just want to make sure that that's not, you know, that's not considered normal, because I don't believe it is.
Well, what should people do if they have questions or reactions, need more information for some of these things that we're talking about?
Well, you can go to my website at biobalancehealth.com. You can call my office at 314-993-0963, and we'll send you a packet to get evaluated for your hormones and come in. And generally, I'm dealing with the hormonal part of it and not the psychological part of it. That's your area.
So as the Chinese say, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step.
Absolutely.
Pick up the phone, get on the internet, and you may discover that this journey is not so long.
That's right. I have great success with this.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brett. This is Dr. Kathy Maupin. This is my 22nd podcast. Come back next week.